The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
No disrespect to the list that was handed out to all the players. I commend anyone that decides to put something on the back of their jersey. You know, it's just something that didn't really, you know, seriously resonate with my mission, with my goal. I would have loved to have a say-so on what would have went on the back of my jersey. I had a couple things in mind, but I wasn't a part of that process, which is okay. I'm absolutely okay with that. So what I will continue to do, you know, off the floor and when I'm talking to you guys and when I'm, you know, everything that I do has a purpose and has a meaning. So I don't need to have something on the back of my jersey for people to understand my mission or know what I'm about and what I'm here to do. So, but I commend everybody and I respect everybody that decided to put something on the back of their jersey. I think that's great. And also respect anyone that didn't.
I get it. That's LeBron James letting you know without saying so that what he's doing is so much bigger and more important than just symbolism and lip service. This is a guy who is actually working to open voting places. This is a guy who is actually building schools. So I don't think he wanted to boil anything down to something as facile as a hashtag or just a name. I think he says more just putting James on there and then doing what he does rather than just trying to put a symbol out there. I am with him on that. Well said by LeBron James. Here to talk NBA is our frequent guest, Brian Geltzeiler. He is on Twitter at HoopsCritic, SiriusXM, HoopsCritic.com, and with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How are you, Geltzy?
I'm good, Dan. How we doing, pal?
Good. Better than the Lakers. I mean, they lose Rajon Rondo. Avery Bradley already is not coming back. I know you had said that's what you wanted. You wanted the Clippers and the Lakers and a titanic battle. What are they going to do to make up for these backcourt holes now?
Well, it's what this does is it exacerbates, not incredibly, but a little bit, the Avery Bradley loss, because Rondo was going to be a small part of that picture to make up for the lost Avery Bradley minutes. And listen, the lost Avery Bradley minutes were going to be Alex Caruso was going to pick up a bunch of those, and J.R. Smith was going to pick up some. Rondo was also going to pick up some. Well, now it'll be more Caruso, more Smith. Will they inject Deion Waiters into the mix? I don't know, but it becomes a little bit more of a factor now without Rondo. Listen, one thing you have to understand about Rondo's existence on the Lakers, it's essentially a guy on the floor to get Anthony Davis the ball with LeBron on the bench. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, because Rondo is a point guard, ball in his hands. And yes, he is not a shooter. He feeds people. But on this team, as we've seen this year, the ball's in LeBron's hands first, last, and most of the time in the middle. So the ball's going to stay there. So when you look at what they're going to do and who they're going to play around LeBron, the ability to shoot three-point shots and not need the ball in your hands, are those guys who those are their strengths. Those guys are going to be at a premium, and they're going to be getting the majority of minutes. That's not Rajon Rondo. So I will say this. I think that the name Rondo carries some cachet and some weight because of who he's been, but this is not the same guy from 2008. And even when you look at what the Lakers do defensively, quite frankly, Rondo's one of their worst perimeter defenders. And as the years have gone on, that part of his game has slipped significantly. So, yeah, listen, I think the Lakers right now do have some depth issues, and Rondo certainly would have helped with that. So I'm not saying it's a good thing, but this is also not a catastrophic type of loss for the Los Angeles Lakers, Dan.
Paul George caught an enormous bass yesterday. I don't know if you're looking at some of those pictures,
but
these guys have a chance. I mean, I'm really envious too, because I think that's private water. That's like, it's just filled with huge fish. I hope they realize the opportunity they're getting to have access to that stuff.
I think they are. Listen, I think there's, first of all, a couple things. We're in the honeymoon period of this. So the fact is you have guys out enjoying what's been provided to them, and it's all very new right now. I mean, I don't know if you saw J.J. Redick's Instagram. He went out and played golf and said that if he got a certain amount of retweets from the picture he posted, he would shotgun a Bud Light. He got those retweets, and he did shotgun the Bud Light. So, I mean, these guys – and it's nice to see the players out there having a good time. So the thing is this. We're hearing players complain. Rondo, which in some ways could be, you know, the karma of the world working on Rondo, they're staying at the nicest hotel that is at Disney in the Grandestino, and Rondo was complaining about his room accommodations. You know, like, it's, people don't want to hear that from these guys. People are happy to see these guys enjoying what they're doing and enjoying the amenities that have been given to them by Disney and by the league. They don't want to hear complaining, but it's nice to see Paul George out there catching a fish, J.J. Redick having some fun, shotgunning a beer and playing golf. You know what? It's, listen, these guys are going to be, and especially on these teams, okay, that are going to be around for a long time. You know what? The guys like Paul George and guys on the Lakers and guys on the Bucks and the Raptors, they're going to be there a while. You know, guys on the Suns, okay, they're not going to be there that long. They're in and out of there in about 2 weeks. But the guys that are going to be there a long time, it's nice to see them enjoying the amenities that the league and Disney have provided.
Have you done any research in general, and I'm sure the gamblers already have, into which teams might fare better away from their home crowd? I guess finding some factor that determines reliance on home crowd energy that may make a difference of a couple of points here or there on balance?
I've dug a little, Dan, and I have not found any kind of data that would determine it one way or the other. The surface stuff that we look at is kind of the best thing you can look at. So here's kind of what I've come up with. And this is, by the way, more through talking to people around the league and less through actually mining through data. But what I've kind of gotten is a few things here. Let's start with home and away. These games are going to be much more like away games than home games to these teams. As much as they say neutral floor, the neutral thing about it is that everybody's on the road. So I look at a team like the Sixers. It's 10-24 on the road this year. They've been a miserable basketball team on the road. There can be a variety of reasons for that, but I look at these as permanent road games, and it doesn't inspire confidence for me in the Sixers. Things along those lines. I've been a big proponent throughout of younger teams being able to withstand the schedule in the bubble much better than older teams. And I do kind of hold to that. Listen, not to say that a rested LeBron and Anthony Davis is not going to hugely benefit the Lakers, and the same goes for the Clippers with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. It certainly is going to. But I think as time wears on, teams that have some young legs there, like the Denver Nuggets, I think are going to be interesting. Like the Dallas Mavericks, I think will certainly be interesting with having young legs. And listen, even a team that's got a lot of veterans but some young guys mixed in, like the Raptors, who have a lot of depth, I think will be interesting. One other item that I think is a very important news item regarding the picture in the Eastern Conference is Kemba Walker, after sitting for 4 months, already is having issues with the left knee, that they're sitting him out of practices and talking about load managing him in the seeding games. This is after 4 months sitting out. That can't be a great situation with Kemba Walker's left knee. And make no mistake about it, with everybody else being healthy and the fact that the Celtics may lose Gordon Hayward for a few weeks when he leaves the bubble to go be with his wife when he has his fourth child being born, the Celtics could have – and they're not a deep team in the first place. They could have some significant issues here in terms of keeping up with everybody if they end up shorthanded once the playoffs start.
A cynic might say the reason why they agreed on the format they did was because it just so happens that the always telegenic New Orleans Pelicans remain involved, as does Zion Williamson. And then you start looking at how the total seeding value of the playoff opponents or their upcoming opponents is going to be here, and you're thinking there's no doubt there's going to be a lot of Pelicans basketball on national television screens. And then you saw that widely circulated photo of Zion, where those of us who had been concerned about his conditioning slipping a little bit, he looks great. He looks absolutely jacked.
He does. And listen, I don't even think you have to be a cynic, man. Understand that the system that was set up so the Pelicans have a chance to get into that 8th seed. Listen, the league, the television partners, they want Zion Williamson on TV screens. And to be frank about it, Dan, do you blame him? I mean, he's electric to watch. People tune in for him. And with the hits the league has taken this year, keep in mind that the league went to opening night against the defending champions. They put Zion Williamson against the defending champions and the Pelicans. But you know what happened, man? They didn't get Zion Williamson. Right. They didn't get him because he was hurt and couldn't play. So what have they done with the restart? The New Orleans Pelicans are back in that first game. So TNT gets kind of a reboot there where they get the New Orleans Pelicans back there. There's no doubt that you want to see that the league wants that, the television partners want that. But I will tell you, I feel very good that Zion has done his share here. He looks fantastic. He is in wonderful shape. And that's going to be a big, big boon to the Pelicans, because when you watch Zion before the suspension, as well as he can score, as good as his defensive instincts were, and as well as he moves with weight on him, it still was hurting aspects of his game. He wasn't necessarily as agile on the perimeter defending as you'd like him to be. Definitely off the ball, there was a little bit of laziness off the ball. His rebounding needs to come a long way. His level of, lack thereof, level of energy when the ball was in the air, I think was a big problem. And I know that a lot of people around the league were talking about the fact that Zion Williamson was just not a guy who was showing a lot of energy to be a plus rebounder. He has the ability to do that. Now with him in condition, we can really see, you know, what, if any, limitations there are in terms of Zion hitting his ceiling, which is really as one of the best players in the league and maybe more.
It's funny you say that, because it's not something that I felt like admitting publicly, but when he was carrying extra weight, and I was watching the number of times that he was rebounding, shall we say, noticeably passively, he looked like Eddie Curry. And that is not a compliment. And no. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time. When Scott Skiles was asked, what does Eddie Curry have to do to be a better rebounder? And he looked the reporter in the eye and said, jump.
And there you go.
Right.
But it's also a lack of energy. And part of that has got to be conditioning. Even there's other stuff like, you know, when Zion is able to, again, before the suspension, when he was able to get out and fill a lane on a break, on the front end of a break, he was great on the break. Mm-hmm. But what would happen when the break got out a little bit in front of him? You know what happened with him? He'd pull up. He wasn't pushing it, and I don't think it's because he's lazy or doesn't, you know, want to do it. I think it was a conditioning issue. But think about, with your getting out in a break, how lethal Zion Williamson can be trailing a break, right? Even if he doesn't get out, and fill a lane, trailing a break, he could be deadly in.
Watch Giannis. I mean, even if he's not in the picture yet, he is two strides away from having his head in the rim.
Right. And what's Zion doing in those situations? He's jogging at the half court, pulling up, and then waiting to walk back up when the ball comes. Right? And that's this is going to be it. Let's see where he is energy wise. Listen, one thing I will tell you, okay? They pulled him from the summer league a year ago, not because he had such a bad knee, but because they saw him running up and down the floor and said, hey, you know what? He is not in the right condition to be on a floor right now, and we are not going to leave him there and allow him to get hurt. And listen, to his credit, when he was hurt, he did what he had to do to rehab, but he had a tough time keeping the weight off. He has taken this suspension period and this pandemic period very seriously to get his body in wonderful shape. He looks great. It's going to be a blast to watch him on the floor, Dan.
Is the Chicago losers bubble happening?
I don't think so. I have to tell you, I didn't think it was a good idea in the first place. And it's very interesting, because before this all broke, I had interviewed Detroit Pistons coach Dwayne Casey on my SiriusXM show. And Coach Casey made it a point to say, I'm happy to bring my guys to a bubble and get them ready to play if we are going to be playing for something. If there's a play-in tournament, great. I'm getting my guys prepared. We're getting in shape. We're going to be ready to play, and we're going to go out there and give it everything we have in games that matter. But expecting me to motivate my players to be able to go play in games that don't matter, just about playing out the string or just conditioning and training stuff under this set of circumstances is next to impossible. So what you have here with the Chicago bubble is, listen, the Atlanta Hawks are a big team that's pushing this. There's a lot of consternation within that organization that they're going to end up with this group of young guys, with Trey Young, with Cam Reddish, with DeAndre Hunter, with Kevin Huerter, with John Collins. They just brought Capella into the mix. They have all of these young guys who are not going to play competitively together for 9 months. That bothers them. They're not happy about it. They'd like to be able to do something to clear it up. You know what? It's so many things that are happening in this pandemic are not ideal for anybody in society. And I don't think, listen, when you're seeing how many positive tests there were before everybody went into the bubble, all the worries about the bubble, I find it very difficult to be able to just say, hey, you know what? Let's put guys in this bubble and take those kinds of risks outside their everyday life just to get guys in shape and have teams be together. I didn't think it was a good idea at the time, Dan. I still don't think it's a good idea. And I do think that maybe the league floated it out there to see what the response would be if they're going to decide to go forward with it. I would be shocked if it happens.
Last thing for you, one of the reasons we were looking at it here was because we were wondering if that meant that Jim Boylan's actual coaching tenure would then be allowed to restart under Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley, as the Knicks are sniffing around some of the prime candidates right now and wondering about the timing of how this is going to go down. It's so quiet on the Bulls front right now. We just don't know where they are with any of it.
It's funny. I hosted on Friday on NBA Radio with Wes Wilcox, the former GM of the Atlanta Hawks, and I started talking about the availability of the Bulls job. And Wes said to me, "Did I miss something, Gelt?" He's like, "Doesn't Jim Boylan still have that job?" And yes, Jim Boylan still has that job as of right now. Listen, I think that the Bulls are going to end up doing something here and moving in another direction. I think they kind of have an idea where they want to be and have a list of candidates that are there. And listen, a couple of those candidates, I think Kenny Atkinson will be on the radar. I think Adrian Griffin will be on the radar. I will tell you this. I don't see Atkinson as a viable option for the New York Knicks. You know, what I've been told is he's lukewarm on that job in the first place. And essentially it would take, you know, Dolan zeros on a paycheck maybe to change his mind. And I don't know that the Knicks want to do that at this stage. I think the Knicks do want somebody there that's enthusiastic about their organization situation. And by the way, I don't blame them. You at this stage of the game for the Knicks to be throwing tons of dollars at guys just to get them to feel like their job is attractive, they don't need to do that with who they are and what they're trying to build there. So I think that for the Bulls, one of the reasons it's quiet is a couple of guys they may have their eye on. They don't feel like anybody is kind of pushing to go get. Because here's the other point in all this. I think it's very important for Bulls fans to keep in mind. And I had this conversation on my NBA radio show this past weekend with Bobby Marks. At one point, Dan, we looked at a landscape in the NBA when the season was ending where we could have had double digits in amounts of jobs that were available, where you were going to see a lot of coaching turnover this year. You know what? I think guys get bought extra time when it comes to this whole COVID situation. And I think that where guys may have gotten fired, maybe they hang around for another year. So I think for the Bulls, they can be patient where you may have worried as we need to go jump on a candidate before somebody else goes and grabs that same candidate. Besides for what, you know, Brooklyn's an open job there. New York is an open job there. And I think that besides that, I don't know what else. We don't know what's going to happen with Houston. We don't know what's going to happen with Philly. But Philly's one of those teams where Brett Brown may have gotten fired if they flamed out in the playoffs before all this. Now he may actually survive no matter what happens. I had heard Lloyd Pierce may be on the way out the door. And all of a sudden, all of this happened, and Lloyd Pierce gets bought more time. You know, so I don't think there's going to be as much turnover, and I think you're going to get, and that's one of the reasons, and very few are as in tune to what's happening in the marketplace than Arturis Karnišovas. So he's got a good idea what's happening, and the fact that he's taking his time means that he understands that who he's looking to get in the end will be available to him when and if the time comes.
But he's making a move.
I think so. Listen, I've always been a Boylan fan. Dan, you understand. I like Jim Boylan personally. I like his attitude. I like what he brings to the table. I love all those things about Jim Boylan. But I also feel like with this particular group
But you're not an idiot. That's what it comes down to.
But you're gonna go in a new direction, and I do think that it's a little soiled between Boylan and these players. I do, and sometimes you get to a point where it's hard to get back. I also think this. I think that for the Bulls, a new voice in charge was so important. Your last two coaching hires have been what I like to call anti-hires, right? So you had Tom Thibodeau, and you've never been the same since you fired Tom Thibodeau. But you had Tom Thibodeau, and then you went to the anti-Thibodeau and fired Fred Hoiberg. And then after a couple of years, you realize, well, geez, that's not working. So what do? You fire Fred Hoiberg in the middle of the season and go to the anti-Hoiberg in Jim Boylan. What you need is a coaching hire that fits your roster, regardless of who the guy before was. All of that stuff has to be – you have to clean slate that stuff right now. And this is one of the reasons that Paxton and Foreman are – I mean, Paxton's there, but he's not in a major decision-making capacity anymore. This is one of those reasons that you have a brand-new team president to come clean the slate and put the right guy in there, regardless of who was there beforehand. So I do think just based upon that, I like Jim Boylan a lot. I think he's got to go.
From your mouth to the ears of the basketball gods somewhere. Geltzy, thanks for the time and continued good health.
Always my pleasure. You too, Dan. Take care, buddy.
Brian Geltzeiler, Hoops critic and Sirius XM NBA Radio. He talks to a lot of people about a lot of things, so I'm glad he said what he said. We got major sports news today, and that is the Washington football team is getting a new name. It is official. They have said it. They said they're, I guess, when they can clear up some of these copyright battles that they have with some of these trademark squatters, that they are going to be announcing a brand new name. Well, last week, Dave Zirin, who is a longtime Washingtonian and an observer of Daniel Snyder and his team, he joined us. I want to revisit some of what he said with the context of today's news. And now, despite some of his concerns, that they are actually going to change the name of that team. So we'll get to hear what he said with some different perspective coming up next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Let me get this straight. You took all the money you made franchising your name and bet it against the Harlem Globetrotters?
I thought the Generals were due. He's spinning the ball on his finger. Just take it. Take the ball. That game was fixed. They were using a freaking ladder, for God's sakes.
Well, the Generals might end up being the next name of the Washington football team. That's one of the great episodes, by the way, because I believe that's the Gabbo episode. And I think it's season 3, which was really the peak of some of the Simpsons powers with Conan O'Brien running the writer's room there. So I'm pretty sure that's one of the great, one of the funniest half-hour programs in the history of American television. There was that, the Clown College one. Those are my two all-time favorite episodes. I'm sure there are others, but those are the ones that that jump off. But yes, the Generals, if you are the betting type, you want to go to betonline.ag. You can get 4-1 for the Generals being the new name. Your leader right now, the Red Tails. And I don't know if that would be some version of Red Tail Hawk or the nickname for the Tuskegee Airmen unit. And I guess 3 of the Tuskegee Airmen were from the Washington, D.C. area. There's some really cool logos that fans have been making, some amateur stuff that looks really, really good. Red Tails at 3-1, Generals and Warriors at 4-1. But Warriors is still sort of encroaching on some Native American stuff, potentially. You can get 5-1 on Presidents. 6-1 for Red Wolves. The Lincolns are at 7-1. The Monuments are at 8-1. The Washington Veterans, 9-1. There are 4 names at 10-1. The Americans, the Kings, the Memorials, and the Red Hawks. The Roosevelts at 14-1. The Skins at 16-1. To just call them the Skins? Mm-mm. And the Jeffersons. The Jeffersons. Followed by Murder, She Wrote. If they did the you can't do the Jeffersons. Because so many of us of a certain age are immediately going to think of the sitcom The Jeffersons. And that's just, it's not where you want to be going with this right now. So I think that's, I think 18-1 on the Jeffersons is probably a bad bet. And considering Thomas Jefferson's own history as a slave owner, etc., that would probably be a bad one. And by the way, the texters are saying that was the Clown College episode, not the Gabbo episode. So I knew it was one of the favorites. Thank you for the clarification from both the 630 and the 708 and the 815. That one is the Clown College episode. You have brought great joy to this old hackneyed Italian stereotype. No, you're not. I am. I know. I am. It's so great, that episode. And I don't know if there's anything awful in it that they've had to remove, other than I think they've had a reconciliation with the character of Apu amid everything that's going on. So I understand that as well. This segment is brought to you by Basement Water Stoppers. Well, last week, we had one of our favorite guests on this show, Dave Zirin of The Nation on the Edge of Sports podcast. And at the time, even with everything that was going on, we were talking about what the Chicago Blackhawks were saying, what other teams were saying about sort of digging in with their name and logo, et cetera, and he thought that might provide a little bit of cover, I think, and he gets into that specifically. But first and foremost, he was skeptical that Dan Snyder would ever allow a name change.
Where we stand is no one should think the Washington football team's name is going to change until the players actually take the field with a new uniform and with a new moniker. There's no reason anyone should think that Dan Snyder is going to just go along with this, even if Target and Walmart stop selling the old gear, which they have. Even if Nike is no longer selling the gear, which they have. Dan Snyder's willing to ride out the storm against all of that because he's impulsive, he's erratic, he's embittered, and he hates being told what to do. Absolutely hates being told what to do. I don't think he's some sort of stone-cold racist, but I do think he has contempt for the people in the Native American community who want the name to change. And I definitely think he has contempt for people who are pushing him to change on the basis of the name being racist. Like, he thinks that is a bunch of hogwash. He hates being forced and pushed to do things he doesn't want to do. So nobody should count these chickens before they're hatched.
So how can you announce that you're reviewing it? Because the review takes about 2 seconds. Let's review.
Yeah.
Is it racist? Yes, it's racist. End of review. How do you come back and say, yes, we've talked to people, we've had our meetings and focus groups and experts, and we've reviewed it and somehow publicly come to the conclusion that it's anything other than a dictionary-defined slur?
Well, that's a great question. And first of all, the idea that there even needs to be a review is silly. Native American groups have been railing against this name for over 50 years. Edward Bennett Williams, who's three owners ago, Edward Bennett Williams, there's a name for you sports trivia folks. He met with people and talked about changing the name. So you're not talking about anything that's new and under the sun. With all respect to Ron Rivera and that clip you played coming in, like when Ron Rivera was coming up and hey, that was just the name of the team. When he was coming up, Native Americans were protesting against it then. It's just a lot harder to ignore those voices in the age of social media. That's really the game changer and the difference here. But the thing about Dan Snyder is that he is totally capable of doing a full review of this and then saying, guess what? I decided that the name means too much to too many people in this community, which is hogwash, by the way. I live here in the D.C. area, and I can tell you that the name is not nearly as revered as he likes to say it is locally. We can talk about that. But he'll come out and he'll say that, and then he'll say, I just made the decision that for the fans, I'm not going to change the name. And it's all tied up with this weird relationship he had with his father, and it's a Freudian angst about his father introducing him to the team. I mean, he carries his baggage with him like it's a 10-ton globe, and he's Atlas trudging down the street instead of something that should be just an obvious decision to say it's 2020, the name needs to change.
All right, so the Blackhawks came out and sort of defiantly, without putting a name on their press release, because we don't know who's running the Blackhawks right now and no one there is talking, but they have decided they're not going to change their name, they're not going to change their logo, and I wondered what kind of press and what kind of cover that would give Dan Snyder to then maybe try to keep the name.
Also, when Donald Trump, who's somebody who Dan Snyder has given over $1 million to in campaign contributions, came out in defense of the Washington team name, I immediately went, oh, geez, because now instead of this being something which it looked like it was headed towards being like this consensus position to say, hey, wait a minute, wouldn't it be great for everybody if the name was just not racist? Wouldn't that just be a better thing? And everybody agreeing on that. And, you know, and even like some of the local sports guys here who've been defending the name for years, they were having fun radio segments about what should we call the name? What are the advantages of changing the name? How can it actually help us locally, you know, particularly in a local market where a lot of people don't like the team because of the name and the stadium has been pathetic and empty for years. So like there have been those kinds of discussions. And then when Trump came out and said what he said and the Braves came out and said what they said and the Blackhawks came out and said what they said, I was like, okay, this is all Dan Snyder needs. It doesn't matter if headwinds are coming into his face. All he needs is a little breeze at his back, and he'll say, I'm keeping this name.
And one of those headwinds is the fact that some of his co-investors in the team wanted out. We were wondering what that effect would be.
I want to speak to everybody out there listening who might be a fan of either Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm. Dan Snyder is best understood as George Costanza with hair. And imagine George Costanza with hair and $1 billion. And that's sort of the character that Larry David is on Curb Your Enthusiasm. In other words, somebody we like to laugh at, but somebody who's utterly and absolutely insufferable. The minority ownership of the Washington football team, like 40% of the ownership, they're just done with Dan Snyder. They are done working with him. They are done cajoling him. They're done holding his hand. And they want out. which is an unbelievable thing in today's NFL, which is like, you know, like Eric Winston, the head of the players union, said, like, owning an NFL team is like being a bartender at spring break. You know, the money just pours in. It doesn't, you don't really have to be that good at it, but they still want out of the NFL. And that is such a condemnation of Dan Snyder and how difficult he is to be around as a human being.
And despite all of those headwinds, if you heard what Dave Zirin said on this show, where he said all he needs is a little breeze at his back, the headwinds won out. We actually got to this point today. We got here, and they're going to have a new name. And in this world in which we live, where there's nothing in our feed but bad news in every headline, everything is always horrible in every headline. I think I've lost the ability to look at a headline and think, ooh, what's horrible about it? Well, nothing. It's actually good. It's okay to have something good every once in a while. We're going to do that next, actually, as Terry Bors is going to join us to remember one of the founders of this radio station who passed away over the weekend. He's coming up next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment is brought to you by Basement Water Stoppers. When your basement leaks, you need help now, not months from now. Call Basement Water Stoppers today, and they'll see you within 72 hours for a free professional evaluation and repairs within hours. Call Basement Water Stoppers, 888-426-3074, 888-426-3074. We lost somebody very important to this radio station over the weekend. Seth Mason passed away at the age of 71. And he and Dan Lee were the people who created Sports Radio 670 The Score out of whole cloth on a little daytime-only signal out of a Quonset hut on the far northwest side. And not only did they create WXRT back in the early 1970s, but they had the vision to build this and to decide that this was something that Chicago had to have. So you have it. And it was because of Seth Mason and Dan Lee. And here to remember some of that stuff is a guy who was there from the beginning. And he joins us in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. It's Terry Bors. Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy. How are you, Dan?
I'm okay. I'm hanging in like
You're
everybody
good.
Else.
All right.
I think so. It's good enough. We're hanging in like everybody is right now. But what were your first thoughts when you heard about the passing of Seth?
Oh, really sorrow. I think that when you put Seth Mason up alongside a lot of guys who had jobs like this in this city, and he matches up with anybody who's ever did it. Matches up with anybody who's ever done it. His vision, his ability to put things together. Remember the first time we met? I went in there, and Dan had sort of been suggesting this, but Seth always did his homework on anybody, everything. He knew what was going on. So I went in his office and sat down the first time we met. He said, I want you to understand something. I said, yeah. He said, I don't know anything about sports. And I said, well, I don't know anything about radio. So we're in pretty good shape already. But, I mean, he was – candid enough and honest enough. He didn't act like he was an expert on this, but he knew his business. He knew what he was doing. If I only had known what I was doing, we'd have been better off. But there was just something about him. And even though people said, well, you know, he's not much of a sports fan, so I don't know what you're going to say to him. I said, well, I'm capable of talking to somebody about something other than sports. I mean, we can sit down and talk about anything he wants to talk about. I said, you know, at that time I was kind of in a lost mode anyway, so I didn't know what was going to happen next. I mean, he was a lifesaver for me, and I think that what he did and his vision, his guts, and his ability, him and Dan Lee, to go ahead and do this, and even though they were the third station in the country to do it, so we were only slightly late to the party, but not very late, in a great city like Chicago that loves the sports and loves everything about it, and everything. I mean, you had in your heart it can't miss, but then again, we're off the air every day at 4:30. We weren't even there. So, I mean, there was so much inherent risk in what he did. And he managed to put together a station that somehow endeared itself to people. I mean, Dan, I have no idea how that could happen so quickly. And it becomes such a fabric of everything. And I don't think it happened necessarily more quickly than your other things happen. And radio or TV or whatever it is. I mean, it took some time. But they were also willing to live with the bumps. I mean, there were a lot of bumps. Trust me, there were a lot of bumps early, and I was one of the bumpiest. So I mean, I understand what he put up with, and yet we could talk. And I was pretty used to at that time being talked down to at that stage in my life, pretty much by everybody I dealt with at that time. And that's not the way he operated. That's not the way Dan Lee operated. I mean, there was never any of that. There was never any. You know, I'm sitting on this mountain here, and I know more than you do. And I wouldn't have argued with him. Hell, everybody knows more than I do. I wouldn't have argued it with him a bit. But the guy was such a visionary and so set on what he wanted to do. And there's nothing that's going to stop him. And Dan Lee was completely in on this because he was the man who was running it. And it made this idea. And people that I didn't even know, I knew Jiggs. I knew Dan McNeil. I knew Tom Scher a little bit from here and there. I didn't know Murph. God, those were the days when I didn't.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you can't now unknow him.
Have you managed to unknow him yet? So anyway, it was just something that it took a while because everybody was mad at first because we were going off where we in the winter. You know, we started in August and they're in January, and right away we're off at 4:30 and we're gone. Everybody's going, what is this? What is this stuff? And then there was a time when we couldn't be heard in the western suburbs, and there was all kinds of bumps. But not once did that guy ever. You know, he called me in the office a few times and we'd talk, and I'd stop by in there once in a while, just sit down and shoot the breeze. But he never, ever said anything about it. He never said, well, you know, you really suck, or well, here's what you need. I mean, not once did he lecture me. Because I'd been lectured so much by that time by everybody from teachers on up. I'd been lectured by everybody alive, I believe. And not once, that's not the way he did business. It's well, just not the way he did things.
There's another aspect, too, that I've been thinking about a lot that I don't think gets enough discussion or enough credit, because so quickly and very shortly after we were officially Westinghouse and were sold, and we were just on with our new corporate lives with our other sister stations. But when you start talking about what it really means to have a sister station, and when you still drive by that building on Belmont and it says WXRT and WSCR on there, that we have a lot of sister stations with whom we're close, but we really share DNA genuinely with WXRT. And I think that informs what you're saying. And part of the reason why he and Dan Lee ran the score the way they did is because of the success they'd already had with their personalities and with their programmers and their sales team at WXRT, understanding it's got to be real, it has to be organic, it has to speak to your audience in a certain way that connects, and you have to allow, I mean, you're talking about, you know, bumps in the road and different things, and they didn't really know how their playlist was going to evolve over time, and there were radio execs saying this is wrong, this isn't how you do it, and they didn't listen to those people because they listened to the people in their building, and they listened to Norm Weiner and Terry Hemmert and Lynn Bramer and so many people there. And I do think that genuinely our growth and our template was so informed by their WXRT experience in creating something vital and real and unique to its market that I think it took me a lot of time to appreciate that. All right, I think Terry dropped off, so we'll check back in with him. But see, that it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, and you know, I'm my P1s, the pro way I have my radio programmed, set up to be Score number one AM, BBM number two AM, and then I have WXRT as my number one AM. It just automatically. And Terry, as I was saying, I don't know how much of that that you heard, but the genuine significance of Seth Mason's experience creating WXRT was so formational and foundational into how he understood the score.
I think that's true. I mean, and you know, the XRT is just great. I mean, those are great people. And they couldn't have been better neighbors because they could have just looked at us and go, what is this nonsense? Because, I mean, look, let's face it. Those hallways were full of nonsense. That's something that real people don't really have to deal with every day. And thank God they don't. But Seth was never, I love it when a guy who is, it's his business. It's his thing. But he doesn't talk down to you. He doesn't act as if he's got every answer in the world. And I mean, I really appreciated that. I felt like, okay, I mean, I can go in there anytime and sit down and talk. And I never had a problem. I never had any problem with him or Dan Lee or any of them to do it. But I always felt like if there's something wrong, I can go in there and talk to him. I mean, not every boss I had over the years I could do that with. not every one I could sit and say, you know, there's something in my mind here. I need to get it said. And so I'm going to take a trip in there. But with Seth, it was always easy. And there's never really anything on my mind. It's kind of like when I'm on the air. So he ran it with just the right touch, even though he didn't care about sports. And I don't know if he ever really started to, but he didn't. But he cared about radio, and he understood that, and he knew it. And, I mean, what he really did was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant putting together what he did, and not including me, because I was god-awful. But, I mean, when you put that all together as he did and managed to make enough people interested in caring already and gathering some of that listenership that people kill for in this business, I think that was so unique, and it was such a good guy. That's the thing for me. You know, I think in your life, if you're lucky, if you run across six or seven people that you say, God almighty, that is a terrific guy. That is a guy I love, and that's a guy I will always love. And I was very fortunate to know Seth. And all of the thing I hear today, I always will think of him and Dan Lee, always. Because this will always be his child. That doesn't change. It doesn't, because he's gone now. But I must admit that there aren't that many people that cross your paths as you go along that are the kind of guy that Seth Mathan was. There just aren't in any business. And I love so much about him, but that in particular, I always felt like whatever it is, you can go in and talk to him about it. Never going to be a problem. Not going to be a hassle. He's not going to scream at you, and he never did, although he should have. I had others doing it. So, I mean, it was just a very comfortable fit because of him, because of Dan Lee. I mean, you could have tension. Everybody's got a little tension, a little stress, things going on in their life that aren't perfect. And not every day you walk into your studio these days or anybody. Are you perfect? Is everything in your life great? But, I mean, from talking to him, I got to understand that no matter what's going on in your life, once you get in that studio, forget it. Don't. If you want to bring it to the air and there's something you want to talk about, okay, you can do that. But only then. Don't let that bother you, because you got to do this job, and this job is first and foremost. And I mean, there's so much I just learned in our conversations, just sitting and listening to him. And, you know, I know how many people will miss him and how many people loved him. And I just wanted to be counted somewhere down on that list, waving my hand.
Well, Terry, it's always great catching up. And one of the lessons that I think should be learned here is, as we've seen people who run media businesses become increasingly detached from the people who work for them, detached from their newsrooms, detached from their staff, whether it's just private equity firms stripping everything down and just looking at something as part of a portfolio, that it would be really nice for more people who did what Seth Mathan did, who started these stations and cared deeply about him. Like you said it was his kid, and he treated this place that way, and he really did. And it makes me think that so many people would be so better served if more people had that kind of humanity attached to the way they run their businesses.
He should have been teaching it. Yeah, he absolutely could have. He absolutely could have. And by the way, as I go, Dan Snyder, seal a pass.
Yep. And he's okay. One taking an L today. You get the Schadenfreude, the pleasure of him taking an L. All right, take care of yourself, old man.
All right, you too, my friend. Okay, be well.
That is Terry Bors. That made my day. Thanks to him. Thanks to Jason Benetti, and thanks to Brian Geltzeiler for joining us. Thanks to Ray Diaz for all his hard work. Jay Zawoski as well. We're going to do this again tomorrow with all sorts of new and different things. Keep doing what you're doing, please. We're doing well. We're doing okay. Stay distant. Wear your mask. Wear it over your nose. Wash your hands. And be smart and listen to doctors. No matter what anybody says about doctors, especially the top doctors that we have, and people trying to smear them for doing their jobs and trying to keep people safe and being true to their Hippocratic oath, listen to those doctors and listen to people who listen to the doctors. We'll talk again tomorrow at 9. Lawrence Holmes coming up.